It's season two of the Carson McCullough Center's weekly We of Me. This is the last of three episodes based on our interview with Columbus State University archivist Tom Converse.
This segment of the interview has been edited for time and content.
What's your sense of what scholars have done with the material so far? I don't know how much you know about that, but
I've helped several researchers. I have not actually seen the product of any of them yet, yeah. Including Mary Dearborn, although I've looked forward to seeing that. I think it's going to be wonderful. But we've had researchers by mail, by email, by phone from France and from Japan and from Chile who've looked at it. Also, we've had people who have used it who are students here at CSU, you know, just English students, undergraduates who've come and looked at different things for their papers as well. Virginia Carr, it would have made her biography a little richer, I'm sure, a lot richer.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Mary Dearborn talks about that. And in fact, all of the subsequent biographers and also Jen Chaplin, who is... I don't know what you want to call that book, My Autobiography of Carson McCullers. By the way, she definitely made extensive use of the materials in the archives when she was here. She was here for a month. Mm-hmm. It must have been spring of 2016. And she told me, and she says this on the podcast, you know, it sort of gave me direction for my book. It was a major turning point in the development of that book, which has been hugely successful, you know, reviewed.
I have that, but I have not yet read it, I confess. I just read The February House a few weeks ago, and I've got these things that are on my stack, and that's one of them, but I've not yet read it.
Well, she was appreciative of the stuff that the McCullough Center has and to have that opportunity. All of the biographers have acknowledged the work that Virginia Spencer Carr did. Josiane Sauvigno, for instance, says, you know, all future biographers will have to use her work.
And I agree with that.
Yeah. And whatever you want to say about Virginia Spencer Carr's biography, some people don't like her opinions about certain things regarding Carson and her work. I think including Jen Chaplin feel differently about that, but they all acknowledge that she did her homework. I mean, she interviewed everyone there was to interview, and many of those
tried to.
Yeah. And many of those people were later dead. She told me one time, Virginia Spencer Carr, that she believes she was the last person to ever interview W.H. Auden. Because she went to his house in Austria and he met her at the gate. She told this great little anecdote about, and she interviewed him, you know, because of his having spent that time, February House and all of that with Carson. And then it was like very soon after that, he died.
No, she left no stone unturned. Some stones refused to turn, but she tried.
She did.
Turned.
Well, and so what Mary Dearborn said was, she said, it's an excellent biography. And Mary Dearborn, she's a professional biographer, right? And she said, it's an excellent biography. And, you know, of course, I leaned heavily on it. And she said, I feel like what my biography offers is what is now in the archives at CSU. That's what Virginia Spencer Carr, as you just said, didn't have access to. And she said, I hope people will feel that they sort of complement each other. You know, you should read the Virginia Spencer Carr biography, and then you can read mine and find out things that Virginia Spencer Carr didn't have access to.
Somebody described her to me, Carr, as a force of nature, you know, that she would just bulldog her way through. And there were people who didn't want to talk to her, whom she talked around, and she just kept asking and kept asking. And like there were some letters from Virginia Carr to Ida Reed, which I thought were really interesting. And Mary Mercer just refused, of course, to let Ida even think about it, answering them. But she said Ida is illiterate. She can't read. And she certainly wasn't going to read the questions to her and send them back to Virginia Carr. So she sent four or five sets of multi-page questions to Ida Reed.
Maybe it was Virginia Spencer Carr's doggedness that, you know, the biography benefited from it. But I met Virginia Spencer Carr and, in fact, shared the stage with her on a couple of occasions. And I came away every time wanting to throttle her. because of things that she did that in a professional situation like that, you should not do. She does exactly what I tell my students not to do. You know, if they give you 15 minutes, you deliver 15 minutes, maybe 14 and a half. Well, you give Virginia Spencer Carr 15 minutes, she's going to take 45. Mm-hmm. And then there, everybody else is left with, well, I guess we'll just share this last 15 minutes that she's left us. Yeah. So anyway, she was a piece of work, as we say, yeah, I'll say yeah, that. But
now
but
my wife had her for English here at CSU. Right? Yeah. And she had just finished her book, I guess, on Dos Passos. And that was one of the authors that she taught in her course. And my wife is a lifelong lover of Dos Passos. So, mm-hmm. I mean, she really was apparently a good teacher, mm-hmm. but very anecdotal, I suspect, and rambling, maybe, I don't know. But my wife enjoyed her class.
Well, it should be admitted that when I met Virginia, it was very late in her life.
And this would have been 1972 or 73 when my wife had the class.
Yeah, well, one of the occasions that I'm thinking of is when the University of Georgia reissued the biography in paperback. I can't remember what year that was. It was the early 2000s, but it was later. But, you know, Thornton Jordan, who the McCullough Center would not exist if that's it were right. not for Thornton Jordan. He that's is, right. For our listeners, Thornton Jordan was on faculty at Columbus College, a colleague of Virginia Spencer Carr in the 70s. Thornton is also from one of the original mill-owning families in Columbus, and he is the one who bought the Smith McCullers house when it became available in the late 1990s and donated it to Columbus State University, and which then allowed us to found the Carson McCullers Center for Writers and Musicians. So we would not exist. We would not have that stuff in the archives. We would not have the house in Nyack either, because that's how it all, you know, happened. That started. But he is a defender of Virginia Spencer Carr's biography. In fact, it sort of gets his hackles up when new ones come out, because he will immediately read it and say, there's nothing in there that you couldn't find out in Virginia Spencer Carr's. Virginia's is still the one, right? We don't need all these other ones, and which I think is kind of funny. Anyway, he was someone who knew her well, and I think he is himself proud of the work that she did.
And among his papers, which we also have in the CSU archives, are a thick legal folder on the actual purchase of the house, the condition it was in, the report of the building inspector, what needed to be replaced, what needed to be repaired, and really detailed things for the house itself, the physical house, as well as information about the purchase of it and who owned it and who met and he got it and what he did with it. It's really interesting to see that kind of nuts and bolts.
I think that you have become such a great resource, Tom. And I really appreciate the time that you have spent and the professionalism with which you have approached learning about the materials that we have, because I know it's very valuable to us as the McCullough Center, but also to all scholars who are interested in Carson's work. And so I really want to thank you for all of the great work that you've done.
Well, you are most welcome. I've enjoyed it. I had no idea when I came here 10 years ago as a retired archivist and started working as a volunteer that I would wind up having such a delightful capstone, if you will, to my career as an archivist. It's been wonderful and enjoyable.
Do you have anything else that you would want to read to us?
Well, I do, if it hasn't already been read, and that is the unpublished poem that recently was given to the archives by the Bergen family.
No, it hasn't been. And please, would you first tell our listeners that story? And then, please do read that poem for us.
I think you had more than little to do with it. I think I heard that.
Well, the person contacted me first mm-hmm. and asked me if we would be interested. And of course, I was like, you bet we would. Yeah. And so then there was some back and forth. And then I think, David Owings, I put her in touch with David mm-hmm. Owings to formally receive this gift. And so,
And she wrote a very nice letter and said the poem was written for and dedicated to Jack and Edith Begner, who were friends of Carson's and Tennessee Williams in Nyack, New York. And actually, this is their daughter-in-law. I married their son in 1965 and never met either Carson or Tennessee, but she had said that they had lived in Manhattan for many years. She was a published novelist and Jack was a doctor, and he had patched up Norman Mailer frequently. And she remembered seeing him sitting in a kitchen table waiting for Jack to patch him up after his legendary Saturday night brawls in the bars of Provincetown. And she says, I hope this poem will find a treasured place in the collection of Carson's work. As you can see, she directed the poem was not for publication, but I assume that was limited to Jack and Edith. So I had no idea what she would want these many years later, but since it's now part of our collection, we can do with it what we will. So this is it, untitled, and it reads, "Select your sorrows if you can, edit your ironies, even grieve with guile, adjust to a world divided, which demands the candid senses stooped to labyrinthine wiles. What natural alchemy lends to the scrubby grocery boy with dirty hair the luster of Apollo or golden hyacinth's fabled stare? If you must cross the April park, be brisk. Avoid the cadence of the evening, eyes from afar, lest you be held as a security risk. Solicit only the evening star. Your desperate nerves fuse laughter and disaster, and higgly-piggly giggles once begun crown a host of unassorted sorrows you never could manage one by one. The world that jibes your tenderness jails your lust, bewildered by the paradox of all your musts, turning from horizon to horizon, noonday to dusk, it may be only you can understand. On a mild sea afternoon of blue and gold, when the sky is the mild blue of a Chinese bowl, the bones of Hart Crane, sailors, and the drugstore man beat on the ocean's floor the same saraband." Carson McCullers. And then in her almost illegible handwriting, it says, "For Edith and Jack, all love, Carson."
Wow. Terrific. Man, that is something, isn't it? I that is so special. When people contact me with something like that, it's just, you know, it's just like, I'm so thankful, and it's so special and serendipitous, I guess is the word. You know, you're just like, you don't expect it. And then out of the blue, it reminds me of something that happened when I was in NIAC a few years back. The Rockland Historical Society does I think it's an annual open house, and they ask for people in the community to open their homes and allow people who do the parade of homes or whatever they call it to come and look at them. They asked if we would open the Carson McCullers house, and I was happy to do that. And I was there all day, and people came in and out and looked around, and someone asked me questions, and a woman came in, and she said, "You know, this is not the first time I've been here." And I said, "Oh, really? Have you been for some of our events?" And she said, "No, I was here when Carson lived here." I went, "Really?" And she said, "I was in those days what they now refer to as an EMT. And she said, "I took Carson out of this house on more than one occasion." This is what the woman said to me.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow. And I said, "Did you?" And she goes, "No, I was not on, you know, I was not on duty when they took her out of here the last time." But she said that she had been in that house, and she had met Carson McCullers, and she had attended upon her. And I had so many questions I wanted to ask her. And then, of course, other people were there. And I lost the thread. And you know, now I'm like kicking myself that I didn't get her contact information to talk to her some more about that. But that kind of thing to me is just, it's so.
Oh, yeah. And I think there's a world of oral history things that might even now be done, you know, with people like that who knew her. But, you know, Mary Mercer was so obsessive about her attempt to get a complete picture of Carson McCullers' life. There are even photographs of the ambulance that took her. And I don't know if it was her last time or not, but I think the NIAC hospital probably only had one ambulance, and that was it. And there's a photograph of it. I mean, it's just, it's wonderful. I mean, to paraphrase Forrest Gump, I guess the Carson McCullers collection is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. Every time I would reach into a box, something delightful would come out of it, just almost without fail, whether it was the delight of the seeing the Greek tragedy and the catharsis of that, or the soap opera, or the even the Milton Berle show. You never know what's going to come out of it. I have really enjoyed working on it.
Well, thanks so much again, Tom, for being with us. It's a fascinating story that you have to tell now about the materials of Carson McCullers. And I'm sure there are many of our listeners who are also Carson McCullers scholars who will want to meet you someday in the CSU archives.
That would be great. We're going to return to pretty much full regular hours, I think, after May 17th, I believe. So we will be open, and there won't be need for an appointment. They should still check to make sure that hasn't changed, but we are hoping to return to pre-COVID hours of access. And we're happy to see anybody who wants to come research. We'll show them a good time.
All right, great. Well, thanks again, Tom, and have a great day. Hope to see you soon.
I hope so. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye. Okay.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Carson McCullough Center's weekly We of Me. If you enjoyed this episode, you can find more at mccullerscenter.org or follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. This podcast was brought to you by Columbus State University's Carson McCullough Center for Writers and Musicians and by Columbus State University's recording studio. The music you heard during the intro and outro was written by Lilia Uge in honor of Carson McCullough's 100th birthday on February 19th, 2017. I'm Nick Williams, technical director for these podcasts, and I hope you have a great day. Tom Converse's reading of Carson McCullough's poem is from the Dr. Mary E. Mercer Carson McCullough's collection in the Columbus State University Archives. The music you heard during the reading was White Moonlight, performed live in Legacy Hall by Dr. Andrew Zone and Erdong Lee on January 26th, 2020.